Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can listen to our sermons, interviews, and Pastor Pod on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and any popular podcast platforms. Welcome to A Bigger Table. This series is going to focus on groups of people whom the church tends to marginalize and put on the fringes, rather than fully including and accepting them into the body of Christ. Churches often say we are welcome to all, but if you're an outsider, or you don't understand the undertones of Christian subculture, then you really are not welcomed in reality. These series of interviews are meant to shed light on those that the American church has hurt, in an effort to reconcile and make the Lord's table even bigger. At New Hope, we practice an open table, that no matter where you are, or where you're from, or what you believe, you are invited to participate. So let's take that practice into the world. Let's include those who the church has shamed and guilted for far too long. I hope you'll take this journey with me as we discover the stories of those who are our friends and family. This is A Bigger Table. This series starts out with the LGBTQ community. Churches have been historically hostile to this community, and many still are today, deeming these relationships and orientations as unnatural, unbiblical, and sometimes quoting Leviticus as an abomination. It wasn't until recent history that some churches have been inclusive and welcoming to the LGBTQ community, including the Episcopal Church, the ELCA, which stands for Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, the PCUSA, which is Presbyterian Church of the United States of America, and UCC, United Church of Christ. Why those denominations have decided to bless same-sex relationships and include the full spectrum of sexual orientation is in an episode yet to come. But this episode will cover stories about identity, how people knew they were different, and what it was like to grow up knowing that. To start us off, before we hear from our guests, many of us may be confused on what LGBTQ means, and how it continues to evolve and add more and more letters. I'll walk you through it. The L in LGBTQ stands for lesbian. Lesbian is a woman who is sexually and or romantically attracted to other women. G is for gay. Gay is a person that is sexually and or romantically attracted to people of the same gender. This can be used for our sexual orientations, but most commonly known as when a male is attracted to another male. B is for bisexual. It is a person who is attracted to people of more than one gender. T is for transgender, as a term to describe a person whose gender identity does not match their assigned sex. Q is for queer. And this is often used as an umbrella term for all minority sexual orientations and or gender identities. Not all individuals use this term due to historical negativity. However, it is being reclaimed as a way of saying that they are different and wonderful. One last one. You'll hear from Jaylen in this podcast, and she would fall under another Q. Questioning. Someone who's not sure as to what their sexual orientation and or gender identity are. Those are only a couple of the letters, and for a full list of definitions, check the show notes for a link. The most important part of practicing inclusion is to hear the stories of those who have been affected by the church's words and actions. First, we have Shelby, who lives in Portland, sharing with us her identity, how she knew, and what it was like growing up. Hi, Shelby, and I'm glad you've joined us today to talk about your story. So first, tell us a little bit about how you identify.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be invited to share my story. Well, I am a cisgender lesbian. And for anyone who hasn't heard the term cisgender before, it just basically means that I identify with the gender that I was assigned at birth. This one's for my mom. In the words of Shania Twain, I feel like a woman.
Well, Shelby, tell us a little bit about how you knew that this was your orientation.
Well, I'll I'll kind of ask a question in return. How does anybody know? Mm-hmm. You know, how did you know that you liked girls? You know, when you're a kid and you're starting to have awareness of other people in a sort of romantic way, you one day you have a crush on somebody, and if you're gay, it just happens to be somebody the same gender as you.
Tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up knowing this about yourself and knowing that this was maybe kind of out of the norm for your particular community.
Yeah, well, I would say that my childhood was pretty normal. It's me, my mom, my dad, and my sister. So kind of the traditional shape of a family. And we lived in Kansas most of my life, and my family is very faithful, so I was raised in the church. It was a normal life. I was a normal kid, but definitely when I started to realize this aspect of myself, I really had no idea what to do. There are no other out queer people in my family, as far as I know. As far as I know, I was the first one to come out, which I did when I got to college. And so I didn't really have anybody that I could talk to about it. I was afraid to talk to anybody about it because, you know, you hear about backlash when people come out, and I didn't know how to deal with that as a kid. So I tried to make it as much not an aspect of myself as I could. I didn't think about it. I didn't talk about it.
Would it have felt like that you would be all alone and that you didn't have any allies or support around you?
Yeah, I mean, I really, like, well, firstly, I didn't really know, I didn't have a word for it when I first realized it, just because I had never, to my recollection, heard it talked about. I had never met somebody that was gay, to my recollection. I'm almost certain that I did at some point in my life, but just not that I was ever conscious of. And then when I started to learn these words, they came with a negative context. You know, you were seeing things in the news, and you were hearing things around the church that implied that it wasn't something that was okay, and it wasn't something that you should talk about. So I didn't.
Next, we have Jay Lynn, who will talk to us about her experiences. She's from West Michigan, currently living in Grand Rapids, and this is a special one to me because she was a youth student in one of my youth groups in Michigan while I was there several years ago. Jalen, thanks for joining me today. So Jalen, how do you identify?
This is actually kind of a tough question, which I think for a lot of people is kind of like the easiest question. But through like my whole journey, this was the hardest part for me to get by because I knew people were going to put labels and identify me. I, at a point in my relationship or pre my relationship with Sarah, I was just so fed up with myself, and I was so fed up with everybody else and the what ifs and what are they going to call me and what do I call myself? And I don't know what this is, that I honestly just don't really say anything, but I always say, like, if we were going to put a label on it, I'm engaged to a girl, so I guess I would identify as lesbian.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways to identify, right?
And yeah. Even I get confused.
Yes.
I don't know. People are going to call me things that I've never even heard of before, and yeah, so it was weird, but people ask me that even now, just like friends of mine who they're like, oh, I hope you don't mind me asking. I'm like, no, it's fine, because honestly, I don't know either. But if we're going to put a label on it, I mean, I'm marrying a girl, so I guess we'll just call it lesbian. I don't know. But if you ask Sarah, she would call herself bi.
Yeah.
So she's a little different. It depends on the person, that having a specific identity is sometimes really comforting. And if they're, like, internally really struggling with
who they are or what they are or who they love, then sometimes being able to put a solidified answer to it is actually really comforting, because then they're not in this no man's land and they're not mm-hmm. in a place that nobody can like talk to them for who they really are. And so I think that especially in the LGBTQI plus community, that it's a sense of comfort and identity and home when you've struggled in what that may be for you. And that was a struggle that I chose not to battle with because I was so fed up with it that I'm like, whatever you want to call me, go for it. Because my relationship's not going to change no matter what.
So then how did you know that you identified differently?
Sarah is the only girl I have ever been with, and I am now engaged to her. So I don't have a big like dating experience, I guess, or coming out experience in that way where I was like, oh, wait, she's really cute. What's going on? I didn't really have that experience, but so Sarah and I were really good friends through freshman and sophomore year of college. We were like the best of friends. Then I dropped out of school and I moved to Guatemala. And after I got to Guatemala, I got a text from her and was like, we need to talk. And I'm like, okay, whatever, we can talk. And she had told me that she had feelings for me that were outside of just being her best friend. And at first I was like, whoa, like, nope, we can't go there. I've never done that before. That's a no-go. But we actually had lots of conversations about it. So the part where I just got really fed up with myself was that I could never give her a no. Like, my first reaction was like, no, but then I was like, wait, maybe. And I had conversations with a lot of people, with myself. I prayed about it, hoping that there would just be a flat answer that was in front of my face, like, nope, you can't do that, or like, yes, go for it. And there never really was, so I was kind of sick of being in this limbo waiting game. And what I ended up telling Sarah one day was, this is either going to be forever or never. Like, this is either going to be awesome and it's going to work out, or like, this is going to end awfully and I don't want to be friends with you again. Like, this is going to be weird. And so I literally said, why not? I'm never going to know in my heart if this is something that I'm capable of and like loving you beyond a friendship. I've never been in that experience before, in a relationship like that before. But there was something in my heart that was like, I could not give her a strict no. Like, I could not do it. And this was like months. It's like, I could not. It was not just one conversation in one night that I toyed with it a little bit. Like, it was a good 6 months of I was just like, what is going on? Why can't I tell her no? And so I told her, why not? And there was a lot of struggles. There still are. But now we are engaged and just moved in together. It was the forever part of the forever and ever, which is awesome.
Since it seems like you didn't know until this point. What about the question of what was it like growing up?
I grew up in a religious, faith-filled home, and it was kind of on and off. So we would go to church for a while for 3 years, and then something would happen and we wouldn't go for a while. And then we would find a new church home and we would go for a while. Or, like, I didn't really go to church a lot, but when I met you, I was going to youth group once or twice a week. Mm-hmm. Or, like that was kind of my church for a few years, because I really wasn't going to church on Sundays. My mom was very adamant about wanting our faith journey to be our own and not one that she put on us. So I think it was always very open and honest, and there was no judgment, just love. And I never remember ever growing up thinking that like boys who like boys is wrong and girls who like girls are wrong. Like, I never remember having that conversation, knowing that, hearing that, growing up at all, which I am just so, so, so thankful for, because it made this much easier. Even though as I grew in my own faith, I definitely, there is, you're around it long enough and you dive deep into faith, there is people and parts of the Bible that say this is wrong. Mm-hmm. And so having a personal relationship with Jesus and having a faith, it was very hard being like,
you love me and I love you, but something says this is wrong along the way, but I don't feel like it's wrong. And that is where I usually always stood really strong, was that I don't feel that this is wrong. And if I have a relationship with Christ, and knowing that, like, at the end of the day, my identity is with Him and I believe in heaven, like, all of the amazing things that having a faith offers and brings to my life, that if I have that firm foundation, but in my heart I don't feel that my relationship is wrong. Circling back, growing up, I think it was just a very open and honest and full of love place that we could explore and be exactly who we are, which made it much easier to come up to my family.
Up next, we have Leah and Rebecca, who are a married couple living up in Denver. Leah and Rebecca, thanks for joining me. Why don't you just tell us how you identify?
Sure. So this is Rebecca. I typically identify as gay.
And this is Leah. Same as Rebecca, we both identify as gay.
Tell me the story of, like, and each of you can take a turn at this, of when did you know? When was there a moment, or was it just kind of unfolding over time? What was that journey like for you?
This is Leah. I think for both of us, we have very different stories. And so I think that's an interesting part of our relationship. For me, I think I personally knew, like, when I was in kindergarten. I definitely, like, was far as attracted as a kindergartner, first grader can be to other people. I noticed that I was far more leaning towards, like, females. And as I got older, I think that piece always stuck around. I never, like, felt the same, like, inclination towards boys when all of my, like, friends were like, ooh, this boy's cute. That wasn't my thing. And I never felt that connection, and I was on a completely different path. But growing up in the area that I grew up, that wasn't necessarily an option. And so I think, you know, for me, it started at a young age, but it took a really long time for me to fully accept that and feel comfortable living that and living my truth, I think.
And kind of differently, I grew up in a pretty open, liberal area with, you know, the friends and family that I was surrounded by. And so for me, I don't know that it was specifically a moment or a time, just kind of developed over time, I guess. And so as I got into more of the dating age range, that was kind of my time that I explored my sexuality more, as I became, you know, of age in high school, and really was able to just kind of follow into that over time.
So then, Rebecca, you said you kind of grew up in a more liberal area. And so what was it like for you growing up then?
Yeah, I think there was never, like, a one way or the other. You know, it just felt like there were options. It never felt like I was hearing messages from other people that I was only supposed to be attracted to the boys in my class or whatever it was, that it was just kind of more open. And there wasn't necessarily just one way that I thought things were supposed to be as I was getting older.
As you got older, was there any kind of hesitation or fear of the way you identified?
Sure. I mean, I'd say it wasn't like an instant comfortability. I certainly took my time just making sure that I understood what I was, you know, doing, and just that I was comfortable in who I was dating and spending my time with. So certainly it took a little bit of time before I felt comfortable with how I was identifying. But I think my parents were always supportive. I had friends who were pretty supportive. And so while it did take some time, it also, I didn't face a lot of backlash or a major kind of crisis of sorts.
Well, that's good. That's, yeah. And that can be rare, I think, but that was good that that was your experience. What about you, Leah?
I have the opposite end of that spectrum, I think. And again, I think that's why it's cool that we have the relationship that we have, because we came from such different backgrounds in terms of just what was acceptable and what wasn't and what the messaging was as kids. And so for me, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, and it was a fairly conservative area. I grew up going to a non-denominational church with my mom. And my dad wasn't present in the church, but there were always those hints of messaging at home where, you know, if there was like a rumor about somebody else being gay, you know, my mom would make some comment about it. And, you know, she maybe didn't necessarily like mean awful things by it. That was the similar messaging that I got at home. And I think similarly in the church, and even with a lot of people that I went to school with, it was just, you know, a school of white, seemingly straight people. And so I never really even had anybody to like look at and say, oh, that person's gay, that person's out, and that person's doing okay. And so for me, the option just felt like it was never there. And so I very much felt this pressure to date boys and just try to almost like fake it till you make it sort of thing. And obviously that wasn't gonna ever work for me, but I definitely felt like that was who I had to be, especially during high school. In order to like have my parents still like be part of my life and to not be totally ostracized by my community.
Is there any examples you can give of those small comments that tend to make people who are either questioning or discovering their sexuality makes them feel unsafe to come out?
I think there was one other kid in my class in particular, when we were in high school, that she had been dating another one of the girls at our school, and that other girl's parents had forced her to move to a different school. And I just remember my mom saying things like, oh, that's disgusting, or I just don't understand. She'll still do that one sometimes. I just don't understand. It doesn't make sense. It's not natural. It's not right. You know, you're just confused, or it's just a stage thing, I think, is things that teenagers especially hear very often from their parents. I don't know if Rebecca has any other examples, but
no, I mean, not particularly.
Those ones kind of cover the main ones.
I know with a youth student in the past, they had talked about how their parents were very open about people in same-sex relationships and saying, you know, that's okay, that's, you know, people can do what they want. But then she had come out and told them that she was bisexual, and then the parents were like, wait a second, you're just confused. And I think those are some of the things too that people send mixed signals, because they think, as long as it doesn't affect me, I'm fine with it.
Not my backyard, kind of.
Right. Mindset. Something that strikes me when I listen to these stories is the fear. Fear of coming out, fear of what their community or family might do or say. In some ways, I think our faith is supposed to help us when we fear. It doesn't mean we won't ever have fear, but we have a firm foundation to stand on, to give us hope in the midst of fear. Why can't that spur us forward into a world where we can grow more compassionate and full of grace? In some of these stories, we have found that when people find that they are gay or lesbian, that the reaction is the opposite. It is constricting and limiting. Friends, may you continue to grow in grace and compassion in your journey to look more and more like Jesus. You may just save a life. Thank you for listening to these stories. Next week, we will hear from our guests about their experiences with faith in the church. This has been an episode of A Bigger Table on Voices of Hope. If you enjoyed this episode and podcast, please rate and review us and share us with your friends. We will see you next time.